Saturdays.
Good old friend of the show, men's sex coach Cam Fraser, doing the A to Z of sexual fetishes. Good evening, Cam Fraser.
Hey, good to be back.
Another weekend of sexology, no doubt. Now, we are up to the letter Q. I thought, oh, God, Cam Fraser, there's not too many words in the English language that begin with Q. I thought about texting you earlier on today, giving you a free pass. But don't worry about Q, mate. No, I'm sure you've got just enough stuff for R and S. And I thought, hang on, who? It's Cam Fraser we're bloody speaking about. Of course he'd have something for Q. Now, what is the A to Z of sexual fetishes for the letter Q, Cam Fraser?
Well, today for the letter Q, I've got queening. We'll be a bit delicate here, but queening is the act of crouching or hovering over a partner's face and in the position perfect for oral stimulation of the vulva or the vagina.
Ah, yeah, I call it the Melbourne Cup. Now, this is great. So the queening, it would be the lady who enjoys this, or it could be like, I'm a guy and I like queening. I like when my partner does this to me. Or would it be, I am the lady, I like queening, I like doing this to my partner?
Yes, well, typically the term queening is reserved for like a dominant female partner, and the submissive partner is the person who is, being the throne, so to speak, for this queen to sit on.
Yeah, so like I'm learning a lot, not only with the A to Z of sexual fetishes, but every Monday, there's a lot of psychological at play with these fetishes because it's probably not the most practical position, correct me if I'm wrong, but it is more of a power play emotional side of it.
It is a little bit, yeah, but, you know, there are apparatuses that you can buy. There's little chairs, queening chairs and seats that you can buy which allow for the comfort and the ease of this position to be acted upon.
Wow, I'm just Googling now, queening chair, BDSM queening chair off Etsy. Other websites are available. Oh, goodness gracious. Yes, yes, I'm a queener, guys, so what? I'm a queener, get around me. Oh, wow, yeah, there really are quite a lot of apparatuses there. So that's really comfy. And then, so it is really specifically designed for, it makes sense. There's Kama Sutra for all sorts of different positions for sex. There's probably not enough new positions getting around for the oral side of things.
Yeah, you're right there. I mean, it's probably people in that subgroup that do practice this that are very knowledgeable about the types of chairs and which ones are more beneficial than the others. But, you know, in terms of like if we're just kind of explaining the reason behind this, why people kind of enjoy it, why people get off on it, it's an opportunity for maybe a woman or for a femme partner to assert their dominance over their submissive partner. So again, we're talking about like that psychological play there as well. It's, you know, also an opportunity in a maybe a bit more of a vanilla sense to explore some of that like power play. It doesn't involve anything. Like there's no whips or chains or anything too invasive. It's just oral sex in a different position. So it could be something that people that are, you know, on the edge of vanilla wanting to explore can dabble their toes into a little bit.
Oh, how's this for a deal? Buy one queening chair, get a smother box for half price. Yes. Moving on to R. What is R, Cam Fraser?
For R, I've got role play. So role play, the act of changing one's behavior and also possibly your clothing to assume the role of a different person, typically to fulfill a sexual fantasy.
Yeah, I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. I think it wasn't for Sex Mondays, but we did Are You Into Role Play? And I remember being a bit confused about the whole role playing thing. I've sort of always taken it not really as a compliment when I've had a partner who's like, why don't you dress up as a sexy fireman? Or I've bought you a police costume. It's like, why do you want me to be someone who I'm not? It always seemed a little bit bizarre.
Yeah, so like some people can take a little bit of a offense to it. Like, why do you want me to be not authentic, or why do you want me to be not genuine and be the person I am? And I think like it's important to acknowledge that it isn't necessarily about being someone that you're not. It's about bringing, this is similar to acting, right? It's like bringing your personality to that role, making it your own, and exploring like a different part of yourself, right? Rather than it being someone totally detached from who you are, you still want to embody that whole experience. And so you're showing up just in a different way and having a bit of fun. You know, similar to the reason why people dress up for Halloween and people cosplay and do all these other things, because it's enjoyable to kind of put yourself in another pair of shoes and to maybe act in a way that you might not act if you were just kind of showing up as your regular old self.
It's interesting to see what society has sort of almost voted on collectively as the sexy things in role play. I mentioned policemen and firemen. I guess they're kind of stereotypical women fantasies, at least mainstream media would have you believe. And then for liking girls, like sexy nurse. I always thought the weird one, French maid. Who figured out who voted on French maid? I wouldn't, no idea about French maid. Didn't know anything about the origin of French maid fetish.
I don't, but I think it's got to do with the, like, again, psychologically, this kind of subservient role, the kind of maid and master of the house type of dynamic, again, playing out. And you know, we can look at typical fantasies, I suppose, with regards to, like, best-selling novels and movies, and things like vampires and pirates are also kind of in our collective consciousness very, it's quite a prominent desire that a lot of people have, is like to be kind of taken or to be in charge or to have their attention kind of put on them. And so a lot of these role-playing fantasies end up being of someone who's got like some authority or someone who's got some sort of power or someone who's got some sort of thing that they can contribute that you might not necessarily have in your regular kind of day-to-day sex life.
We are racing through this alphabet. We'll be averaging what? 4 letters, 4 fetishes per week. Oh, we'll be up to Z before the end of the year. Cam Fraser, let's move on to S, the A to Z of sexual fetishes. What is S?
Well, S, I've got sadism, which is a term that describes the experience of taking pleasure in inflicting pain or humiliation or degradation or cruelty, or even watching others inflict these types of things onto someone else.
Ooh, well, and please, for the love of God, do not be mistaking your masochisms with your sadisms. Oh, two completely different things. I guess masochism is the, talked about last week, receiving the pain. This is inflicting the pain. When you say these words, cruelty, pain, etc., some people might be, oh, this is a little nasty. This is a little nasty. But I think like they're massive on the aftercare, aren't they? Massive on it.
Well, you kind of have to be. If you're not, it's considered not very ethical. It's considered not very appropriate. So, yeah, that aftercare and that integration piece and helping you come down essentially from a high or from the kind of trance space or subspace or top space that you get into is really, really important. And so that's, you know, if you're going to be exploring this, that's one of the first things you will come up against with regards to like learning about is how to care for yourself and for your partner afterwards.
Yeah. So when I said last week that I'm not into the masochism thing, I don't like pain, and I was trying to figure out, ooh, is there any pain that I could maybe find sexy or change my neural pathways? And I don't really think I could. So I guess that makes me slightly on the other side. I'd much prefer to be the sadist than the masochist. However, one big caveat, I would want them to be full mass. Like they'd be really into it. Can a sadist only enjoy it if they know that the other person enjoys that? Like you need a masochist to be a sadist? Or it seems a bit weird if you're a sadist. You're like, come on, let me just slap your bum a bit. You'll like this little spiky thing in your leg. A bit weird.
Yeah.
Sort of takes two to tango, I guess.
Well, yeah. So like obviously like an ideal pairing might be a sadist with a masochist, but to enjoy inflicting pain or to enjoy inflicting humiliation, some sadists might say that they get more enjoyment out of it when they know that the other person isn't enjoying it, right? Mm. Because they because that's what they're doing it for. It's for that fact that it's painful or it's humiliating or it's degrading to them. So so the fact that the other person doesn't actually enjoy it could be part of the whole play of that scene that they're probably enacting out. So so exploring that dynamic can be really helpful.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the letter T. What's the letter T for the A to Z?
For T, I've got trichophilia, which is so obviously it's a sexual fetish, but it's where individuals find hair erotic and sexually arousing.
Now, is this hair attached to the body of said person, or are they more cracking fats over like drainage systems and like excess hair in the showers?
No, it's definitely attached to another person, and it's typically the head hair. It's usually the hair on the head, but it's also sometimes connected to chest hair or leg hair or specific types of hair. So it could be like wet hair, or it could be short hair, or it could be a type of hair color. So there's a whole bunch of different subsections of this.
This isn't to do with pubic hair then?
It could be bodily hair, like pubic hair and underarm hair as well. So it could be any hair, but again, like the overarching umbrella term is usually referring to hair on the head. And it's kind of one of the reasons why, like, we enjoy people that have like a luscious head of hair, or some people prefer someone that's got no hair. Maybe they like a bald head. And so usually people have preferences for hair, and some it's kind of one of the reasons why in our mainstream society, we tend to have a pretty shocking reaction if someone drastically changes their hair as well.
Yeah, I've never met a haircut that I liked, ever, ever, ever. Sometimes people get their haircuts around here, that people in the office go, oh, you've got a haircut, looks good. I'm like, really? Are we all playing this game? I think it's just the difference to me, just the shorter difference. And I'm not just speaking about other people, me as well. Some of my worst decisions ever have been haircuts, hence why I let the beard flow and the bushy mane grow right down to my backside. Trichophilius love me. Trichophilius would love me. They go nuts. So I guess what, stroking, not the hair pulling, that would probably be more sadist stuff, wouldn't it?
Yeah, especially if they're doing it with the intention to maybe cause you a little bit of pain or a little bit of discomfort, then yeah, but a lot of these things overlap. You make a good point. Like, there could be this overlap between one type of fetish and another one, and they kind of blend in different ways. So that's also important to remember, is like, these things don't necessarily exist in isolation. They're usually grouped and coupled together with a bunch of other different fetishes.
Yeah, that's Cam Fraser's nice way of saying, stop asking such curious questions. Pubes, scalp hair, armpit hair, it's all the same. What if, Cam Fraser, someone wore a wig and then on top of that was another wig and then another wig? Would a trichophilius love this or hate this? No, don't worry about it. It's just me being silly. Thank you, Cam Fraser. Pleasure as always.
Thanks, man.
Sex Saturdays.